we really want to make sure that we find anybody who still might be trapped in the rubble across all of these states.
Tornado search and rescue efforts. It's Tuesday, December 14th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascio in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia's Queensland reopens, Chinese-funded education censorship concerns, New York City vaccine mandate, coronavirus found in deer, partnering to help kids with cancer. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Search and rescue efforts continue across parts of the United States hit by tornadoes and severe weather late last week. U.S. President Joe Biden declared a federal emergency in some areas and pledged the full support of his administration. Hundreds of thousands of people are now without power or heat at the start of the coldest months. VOA's Arash Arbasadi has more.
Tornadoes tore through several U.S. states, killing dozens of people, with Kentucky bearing much of the brunt with 80 casualties reported. Officials expect those numbers to climb as the search for victims continues. FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell tells ABC's This Week the agency's mission is saving lives.
We really want to make sure that we find anybody who still might be trapped in the rubble across all of these states. But then it's going to be a long recovery, and we really need to focus on how we're going to help these communities with their immediate needs, their immediate sheltering needs, and then the long-term housing needs that are going to really be needed to help these communities and these families rebuild.
These satellite images show before and after shots from Arkansas and Kentucky that capture the devastation of the historic storms that leveled entire communities and tossed rubble more than 160 kilometers away. As the winter cold creeps in, some survivors who lost their homes now seek safety in emergency shelters. Democrat Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear speaking Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press.
We opened warming centers. We had 13 open. Only six are still open because those of us blessed enough to not be hit directly with this tornado take other people in, whether we know them or not. Chuck, we're good people that look out for one another, that have just gone through something incredibly difficult, but yeah. We are resilient and we will rebuild.
Kentucky so far is the only state asking for and receiving an emergency declaration from the Biden administration. FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell says the agency has about 100 personnel there, including urban search and rescue teams, but adds the next challenge is taking survivors to safety.
Severe weather that happens in these cold months, it just makes the impacts of that even seem so much greater. And so, again, working on providing safe and secure sheltering for individuals so we can keep them out of the elements is going to be a priority.
Six states suffered severe storms from Friday to Saturday. Several tornadoes touched down in the region, with one in Kentucky traveling more than 320 kilometers. Criswell says one of FEMA's goals is educating communities on their unique risks and types of mitigation projects to help lessen the impact of future disasters. Arash Arbasadi, VOA News.
Find more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. A court in Hong Kong Monday sentenced activist and business tycoon Jimmy Lai to 13 months in prison for urging participation in a banned Tiananmen vigil last year, amid what is seen as a crackdown by Chinese authorities on Hong Kong civil liberties. Lai's newspaper, Apple Daily, was forced to close its doors after 24 years, when Lai and other executives were arrested and charged under the security law. The 74-year-old Lai is already serving a 14-month sentence for taking part in several unauthorized rallies in 2019. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Blinken in Indonesia to discuss U.S. approach to region. South Korea announces intent to join regional free trade pact. Vietnam's first metro in Hanoi hobbled by lack of riders. After UAE law change, out of wedlock baby still in shadows. UN aid chief says Afghan economy needs restart before year end. Find complete coverage on all these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Tuesday. Queensland in Australia has opened its state borders to the country's COVID-19 hotspots. Stranded residents and tourists from Australia's two most populous states, New South Wales and Victoria, are being allowed to enter after being locked out of Queensland for more than 5 months. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Queensland's reopening came after the northeastern Australian state passed a significant public health milestone. More than 80% of its eligible population has been fully vaccinated, triggering a relaxation of travel restrictions. Tens of thousands of vehicles are expected to cross the state border with neighbouring New South Wales on Monday. Only travellers who've received two doses of vaccine and present a negative COVID-19 test will be allowed in. Among those crossing into Queensland was resident Kennedy Smalley. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that he was desperate to be reunited with his family.
I'm going home to see my kids. Yeah, got stuck on this side of the border and been waiting this whole time to see them, so it'll be nice to be home. Roughly 8 months. Come over here in March to get a job, but it kind of fell through. Stuck around to try and find another one, and then when I managed to try and make my way home, I got stuck on this side. It's more or less a surprise. So, yeah, it will be good to see them and can't wait.
The federal government has been highly critical of a series of border closures by Australia's states and territories that were imposed to curb the spread of the virus. Ministers have insisted the measures were heavy-handed and have harmed the economy. Australia closed its international borders to most foreign nationals in March 2020. Those restrictions are expected to start to ease Wednesday, when skilled migrants, international students and backpackers are scheduled to be allowed to return if they're fully vaccinated. Many businesses in Australia have complained of severe staff shortages. Tourism companies fear they'll lose valuable summer trade because they don't have enough workers, because migrants have been shut out of the country. Australia has had 230,000 diagnosed coronavirus infections since the pandemic began. 2,100 people have died. Almost 90% of eligible Australians have had two doses of a COVID-19 vaccine. Australia is relaxing travel restrictions for travellers despite rising infections and concerns about the effectiveness of vaccines against the Omicron variant. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still to come on VOA Asia, concerns in Africa over censorship with Chinese-funded education programs. Happening now in Asia, visiting South Korea President Moon Jae-in toured the Australian War Memorial in Canberra Monday, commemorating Australians who died fighting in the 1950 to 1953 conflict with North Korea. Moon is on a state visit to Australia, the first such visit by a foreign leader to Australia since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. China said Monday it would not accept an upcoming UN report on the human rights situation in the Xinjiang region, and the image of relevant institutions will be damaged if officials insist on fabricating the report. The Chinese government has repeatedly denied accusations of human rights violations against Muslim Uyghurs in the region. The Chinese government is promoting Chinese language and culture through Confucius Institute programs worldwide, including in Africa. Some educators say they're concerned about what they say is censorship in Chinese-funded programs. Victoria Amunga reports for VOA from Nairobi, Kenya.
Steve Wakoli has been working for 3 years to perfect his skills in Kung Fu, a popular martial art taught at the Kenyatta University Confucius Institute. He's also a teacher here, where hundreds of students are learning about Chinese culture and language at the institute named after Confucius, the ancient Chinese philosopher whose teachings are a cornerstone of life in East Asia. There are about 525 Chinese-funded Confucius Institute worldwide, including 54 in Africa, according to a 2019 U.S. Senate report by the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Jacob Ratemo is one of more than 500 students enrolled here. He says learning about Chinese language and culture will help him find better work, but he admits the institute's classes avoid subjects that are politically sensitive in China.
The advantage is, I think, especially when you're in university level, you can access such matters. You know, I can go to VOA News and on a regular basis and see what is going on in China, or I can go to Google and get that information. So yes, I can admit there are a few challenges when you ask those questions to the Chinese themselves.
According to the U.S. Senate report, Confucius Institute funding comes with strings that can compromise academic freedom. For example, the Chinese teachers sign contracts with Beijing pledging not to damage China's national interests. Confucius Institute's management turned down VOA's requests for comment. Teacher Steve Wakoli says the institute's syllabus does not allow much time for politically sensitive topics and debate. Analysts say the Confucius Institute suppressed discussions on topics like Taiwan and Hong Kong to protect their funding from the Chinese government.
There have been issues around whether or not the institute is being used to propound what would be seen as anti-democracy, anti-human rights. And those concerns are founded in terms of what is the official Chinese policy on Taiwan, on Hong Kong.
Educator Jonathan Wesaya told VOA that the institutes are doing injustice to students by limiting their learning and exposure to different ideas.
Yes, the opportunity comes in through the Confucius Institute, funded by China, that is okay. But can you get as an individual to talk about Taiwan, talk about Hong Kong, talk about Korea, talk about North Korea and South Korea and how they relate, and how the whole bigger picture fits into the geopolitics of today.
With so many signing up for classes at the Confucius Institute, education experts say it's critical that students find other avenues to learn about topics that China may consider politically sensitive. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. A national memorial ceremony was held on Monday for the victims of the 1937 Nanjing massacre in China, where invading Japanese imperial troops raped and killed tens of thousands of people in what was then the Chinese capital. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. A controversial vaccine mandate put in place by New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio has been temporarily blocked until a hearing on whether the measure should go forward. If the judge rules in de Blasio's favor, the mandate will be the most far-reaching of its kind for private sector workers in the U.S. VOA's Nina Vishnieva reports in this story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Music, souvenirs galore, large crowds. Manhattan is once again abuzz with the holiday spirit, as New Yorkers and tourists enjoy the winter decorations and sales. Right alongside the trees and garlands, COVID testing tents, a sign of the time, if not the season.
We were here 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think so, but this is the first time back. Glad to be out and about.
It's great. It's been great, yes. We're vaccinated, we're boosted, we feel totally safe.
I always wear my mask, almost always. Right now I feel comfortable because I'm by myself, but of course right now we have to be super careful.
That's because of worries that COVID will not go away in the new year. To address that, a New York City vaccination mandate is to go into effect this month that will require everyone 5 years and older to show proof of vaccination to eat at restaurants, visit indoor entertainment centers, and attend sporting events. And starting December 27th, everyone aged 12 and older will have to present a vaccination card showing two vaccine shots administered, or one for the one-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Although 90% of New Yorkers have already gotten at least one dose of COVID vaccine, the number of COVID cases has risen by over 75% since November. In announcing the broader mandate, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio said the rise of the Omicron variant is what prompted him to expand vaccine requirements.
Vaccination is the central weapon in this war against COVID. It's the one thing that has worked every single time across the board. On a strategic level, it's the reason New York City is back in so many ways.
A vaccine mandate unveiled earlier this year for public sector employees led to protests by municipal workers, including police, firefighters, and teachers. The new rule unveiled by the mayor on December 6th will apply to all private sector workers in the city's estimated 184,000 businesses. And for some, it's an example of government overreach by de Blasio.
You know, I think that it's extreme. It seems to be ham-fisted and inelegant. And just it's one of a long line of sort of decisions that he has made that seems to be overkill.
But for others, it's all part of life in the Big Apple.
It has everybody a little nervous, a little on edge, but, you know, what can we do? You know, we're trying our best, you know? Just be out here, be as careful as you can. I try to do, you know, my part as well, that's all.
Incoming New York City Mayor Eric Adams, who will take office on January 3rd, says he plans to assess mandatory vaccination mandates based on their effectiveness, latest scientific data, and doctors' recommendations. For Nina Vishnyova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, France on Monday signed an agreement with main export customer China to ensure pork trade can continue even if an outbreak of African swine fever occurs, potentially providing a blueprint for European countries threatened by the pig disease. Stay up to date with VOA or listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Large numbers of white-tailed deer in the United States are getting infected with the novel coronavirus. And while the risk of spreading it back to humans is low, scientists worry that deer could end up incubating new variants. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias reports.
In Maryland, there are 230,000 white-tailed deer, according to the state's Department of Natural Resources. Many roam suburban neighborhoods, and their presence is not always welcome. Maggie Gallagher, for one, lets bow hunters on her land to control the deer numbers.
You can't plant anything they like to eat unless it's fenced. There's a constant risk of hitting deer with your vehicle. The biggest problem is probably the transmission of Lyme's disease.
An even bigger problem could be that whitetails in the U.S. and Canada are carrying the novel coronavirus, though Gallagher is not worried.
There's just not enough information.
But while the deer themselves don't seem to be getting very sick, they could pose a risk to humans. Andrew Bowman is an assistant professor at The Ohio State University.
If the SARS-CoV-2 virus is able to become established in another reservoir besides humans, then we have to consider the fact that the virus could continue to persist, evolve. It complicates our long-term control plans.
How did the deer become infected in the first place? So far, there are just theories. Professor of Biology at Penn State University, Suresh Kuchipudi.
Doesn't necessarily have to be a direct interaction between a human and a deer, but it could be through environment or other inanimate objects. And we also know that the virus in the environment can persist for a certain period of time. It doesn't die immediately.
Hunters who spend long hours in the field are being reminded by the World Organization for Animal Health to avoid leaving any human waste or objects that may be ingested or touched by deer. Epidemiologists are also encouraging hunters to wear gloves when dressing their kill and to cook the meat thoroughly.
Luis Escobar is an assistant professor in disease ecology at Virginia Tech.
Hunters play a key role in wildlife conservation in the U.S. Today, more than ever, it is important that they get vaccinated to protect themselves, their families, and the herds of deer.
One who got the jab is wildlife biologist C.J. Winand, who has been bow hunting for 50 years. He said it should be by choice.
Vaccination mandates for hunters probably would not go over very well. In relationship to wearing masks, we basically already do. We wear a camouflage mask. Although it may not be medically approved, I'm sure it does help.
The U.S. Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service has begun a multi-year project to measure how widespread the virus is in white-tailed deer and the risk to other animals and humans. For now, Winand isn't sure that deer pose a risk, but he's concerned.
It would be devastating if it did jump species barriers. Hunting would be obsolete. We're going to have a proliferation of deer. And what will happen then? The habitat will degrade to basically nothing. They'll have zero to eat, and we'll have a massive die-off.
As scientists in several states continue testing white-tailed deer for COVID, they say keeping wildlife at a safe distance is the best bet. Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Ellicott City, Maryland.
Finally, on VOA Asia, the World Health Organization and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, a leading cancer center in the U.S., are planning to provide cancer medication free of charge to children in developing countries suffering from the condition. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Cancer is a leading cause of death worldwide, killing about 10 million people a year. The World Health Organization estimates 400,000 children globally develop cancer every year, with nearly 100,000 dying. The most common types of childhood cancers include leukemias, brain cancers, lymphomas, and solid tumors. WHO reports nearly 9 in 10 children with cancer live in low- and middle-income countries. Andre Ilbawi heads WHO's cancer division in the Department of Non-Communicable Diseases. He says about 80% of children who have cancer in high-income countries survive. He calls this a major achievement and improvement over the past decades.
But that progress hasn't been achieved for children who are living in low- and middle-income countries, where 30% or less will survive a cancer diagnosis. One of the primary reasons is because of care that is simply not available or accessible, and medicines are a core part of the treatment of childhood cancer.
WHO and St. Jude's Hospital have formed a partnership to change this situation. They've established a platform that will dramatically increase access to childhood cancer medicines around the world. To kickstart this program, St. Jude is making a six-year investment by contributing $200 million. Ilbawi says the money initially will provide medication at no cost to 12 countries that will take part in a two-year pilot program. He says the governments will be involved in the care of the children and in selecting the medicines that are needed.
From there, we'll work with country partners to make sure those medicines are delivered safely and effectively to the children in need. Over time, this will increase to 50 countries or more within 6 years. This means that almost every child around the world, particularly those in low- and middle-income countries, will benefit from this platform.
The new platform aims to provide safe and effective cancer medicines to approximately 120,000 children between 2022 and 2027. The health partners say the program will be scaled up to include many more beneficiaries in future years. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's all the time we have on VOA Asia. Make sure to find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stillman. I'm Chris Gaskill in Washington. Enjoy the day.